I'm Algernon Cash, and you're locked in. This show is where we host thoughtful conversations with people across my personal and professional network who possess deep experience, wisdom, and insight about the issues shaping our communities, our economy, and our future. If you value these conversations, then I invite you to support this work. Your donations help us continue bringing together leaders and thinkers who are willing to have honest discussions about our state and country. Visit lockedin.cash to become a reoccurring supporter. Your contribution helps us continue producing independent conversations that elevate our region. Greensboro is going through one of its most consequential periods in years. A new city council has taken office. Property taxes are going up, and the process surrounding the city's new budget is now being challenged in court. Data centers have sparked an intense public debate, and after initially rejecting a moratorium, city council reversed course less than 2 weeks later and moved toward putting one in place. At the same time, Greensboro continues to attract major investment. Downtown is evolving, and social media has increasingly become a part of how residents debate and sometimes define what is happening in the city. So today I want to move beyond the headlines and ask a fairly simple question. Did Greensboro make the right decisions? Joining me is someone who knows what it means to actually sit in the mayor's chair and make difficult decisions about growth, taxes, and the future of a city. Former Greensboro Mayor Robbie Perkins is back and locked in with us. So, Robbie, how you going, man? Thank you for coming back to join us here.
And Janon, I am doing just great. As you know, I did not win the mayoral election last November. And so I've been having a good time as an observer, working very hard in our commercial real estate business and enjoying quite a bit of travel. So I'm seeing a lot of things that are interesting and unique across the country and the world. And one of these days they'll come to Greensboro.
Well, I envy your travel schedule. You're always going somewhere fun, and I keep up with you on Facebook and your early morning runs in whatever city or community that you happen to wake up in. And so I'm happy to see that you're enjoying life, even though you're not sitting in the mayoral seat. Let's start with the most obvious question, Robbie, because I think this is the question that's on the minds of everyone. I just published an op-ed for the Carolina Journal talking about the new municipal tax rates in Greensboro. You've actually had to build budgets at the city of Greensboro. I mean, so you understand what this means. When you saw Greensboro move its tax rate from, I think, 67.25 cents to 79.85 cents, which is now one of the highest in the state of North Carolina, what was your initial reaction?
Well, you know, 18.8% in a year is unthinkable. But this is not the new city council. There are only three members of the old city council that are on that body that raised the tax rate. So the reason this happened is because our state legislature said we're not going to use the reevaluated numbers and push that off a year. So the city council was counting on reevaluation to give them more of a ad valorem base to tax off of. And they weren't going to go to revenue neutral, but they were going to back it off a little bit. And with the way our press coverage is today, our press really thinks that if you don't raise the tax rate, you're not raising taxes. And of course, that is absolutely not the case. So you've got a filter in place that elected bodies can get away with what they shouldn't get away with. Back in the old days, we would never think about doing anything other than a revenue neutral tax rate. And today, you use the revaluation as a way to increase your budget dramatically. They did it in 2022, and they did it again. We're going to do it again this year. The problem for the taxpayers is next year they will use those new values, and 18.8% will seem lightweight compared to what it's going to be next year, because the vast majority of the residential values in Greensboro increase 40, 50, 60, 80%. And so if unless something dramatically is done to reduce the spending in City Hall, you're going to be paying a lot more next year than you did this year. 18.8% is nothing compared to what they're going to do next year.
You know, Robbie, I had Mayor Pro Tem Denise Roth Turner. She was on the show a few weeks back. This was prior to, well, actually, I think this was shortly right after they had voted in the tax increase. She made the argument that the city needed to maintain services and prepare for future growth, which required additional revenue. But you, again, you've been in that seat before. How do you balance those legitimate needs against affordability for residents and businesses? I mean, would you have just found other ways to maybe cut services versus grow revenue, or how do you balance that decision?
No, our city council is pretty one-dimensional. It's 9 Democrats, much more liberal, very little business background. And so they want to do things. And I understand why they want to do things. They want to help people in Greensboro. And helping people generally means spending money. But someone at some point in time is going to say, we're here to deliver essential services, police, fire, inspections, water, sewer, that type of thing. And we can't continue to add social service programs after social service programs because they're very expensive. And you can only layer so much on the property taxpayer.
Well, you know, how do you balance this as well then? I mean, do you think that Greensboro is basically spending too much? Or do you think that the city is just becoming more expensive to operate?
I think it's a combination of two. I think the inflationary trend that we've had the last 4 or 5 years has hit us. Personnel, insurance, utilities, all of those things go into building a budget, and it's more expensive. I mean, the average taxpayer understands that it costs more at Chick-fil-A now than it cost 4 or 5 years ago. So there's a level of understanding there. But I also know that we've expanded departments. And we have spent money, in my opinion, on things that weren't essential government, and we're going to have to pay for it.
Now, no, I totally understand that. How much of this, Robbie, when you look at what's happening around the state of North Carolina, and I actually put some of this in my op-ed. I encourage my listeners to go to carolinajournal.com. You'll find the op-ed that we published last week. But when you think about some of the growth that's happening around the state, I mean, the amount of jobs that we're creating, I know Greensboro announced nearly 15,000 jobs in 1 year. Is any of that explosive growth also contributing to making the city harder to operate? I mean, is that also feeding into this debate around a higher tax rate?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that feed into that debate, but one is deferred maintenance. And if you look at the deferred maintenance within particularly the city of Greensboro, it's a lot. And so if you're going to catch up on that or at least stay even with it, you're going to have to increase your tax rate. And, you know, I don't mind increasing taxes to pay for necessary services, but when you add things that are well beyond the city's purview based on the charter that they've been granted by the state legislature, then you have to scratch your head and go, how much is enough? So I think there, you know, we expanded the number of employees at the city gradually over a period of years, and the budget has gone up dramatically over the last 4 or 5 years. And it's going to increasingly do that as we see the amount of growth. But I can tell you this, the tax rate is starting to be an issue. I see it in our industrial real estate business. We're looking at very high TICAM is what we call it, taxes, insurance, and common area maintenance on these big buildings that you see being built. And Greensboro at this point is a buck or buck and a quarter more per square foot than Rockingham or Randolph counties, which ultimately will be a factor in shifting folks to locate in those outlying counties because of property taxes. One of the things, and I talk to a lot of people and I listen to a lot of people, and there are folks in Greensboro that I never would have thought about would move, consider moving out of Greensboro, talking seriously about moving out of town because of property taxes. They're saying, we're just not going to take it anymore. And so, you know, you'll see people moving into Greensboro for sure because of all the jobs being put together. And in some respects, Greensboro looks like a bargain, given that they're coming from New York or Chicago or the high tax states. But long time people here in this town are scratching their heads right now and saying, you know, this is getting to be an issue.
Well, one person scratching their head is Greensboro community activist George Hartzman, who actually filed a lawsuit against the tax increase. This lawsuit isn't an argument over whether taxes are too high. He's raising questions about the process used to adopt the final budget after the numbers changed. From a governance standpoint, how important is process when you're making an unpopular decision like raising tax rates?
Well, I think process is always important, as is transparency and accountability. This whole issue could have been solved by somebody saying on the city council, wait a minute, aren't we doing something different now than what we've advertised? And that could have come from, you know, either city staff, city attorney, or one of the members. And then they could have said, yeah, we're doing something different. Well, then let's have a public hearing on this, and then let's take a vote. And then we wouldn't have these lawsuits that tend to draw out and tend to take a life of its own, of their own, and create even more controversy.
You know, Robbie, on July 21st, council rejected moving toward a moratorium on data centers. They voted 5-4. Less than 2 weeks later, they reversed direction and unanimously initiated a proposed 120-day moratorium. I know you're a longtime real estate pro. You're someone that watches these trends at a national and a regional level. Where do you stand on data centers being built in Greensboro?
Well, you know, we've got one of the largest data centers in the country out at that American Express processes just about all the swipes that go through. And it's been here for 15, 18, 20 years and paid a lot of taxes in Guilford County. It's not in the city of Greensboro. But I'm not, you know, we deal with a lot of folks looking for sites for a lot of different projects. And I think it's pretty tough to find a 500 to 1,000 acre site that will be in the city of Greensboro that could be used for a data center because of the power demand. So I think we're kind of talking about and trying to solve a problem that really doesn't exist.
Yeah, and that's sort of how I feel, Robbie. I mean, there seems to be a lot of public anxiety around data centers. I mean, there's always public anxiety around just real estate development in general. My argument is always that, you know, we shouldn't just say no. You know, we need to figure out how to say yes, but we're going to do it safely and responsibly. You know, what's your message to just the average Greensboro resident that, in my opinion, feels like they might be blowing this out of proportion right now?
Yeah, I don't think it's a big concern. The data centers aren't going to come to a high tax environment. They'd rather be in a place where they can get power and not be bothered. And so I don't think that they're going to be coming to Greensboro. Now, we're seeing rapid change within that industry. And of course, all of us use our handhelds and our AI and everything else. And that causes the dramatic need for the data centers. But I just don't see Greensboro being on their radar screen at this point. Now, what I would be concerned with if I'm thinking through it from a regional perspective, Greensboro cannot exist on an island. And I'd be working with Guilford County planning to try to figure out what our increasingly urbanized Guilford County is going to look like over time. For example, one of the worst decisions I've seen made was made in a vacuum, with Guilford County taking what was on their comprehensive plan, about 400 acres on McConnell Road, that would be some of the prime residential land in southeast Greensboro, and allowing zoning for a solar farm. And that land's going to sit for 40 or 50 or 60 years with prime transportation access up to Mount Hope Church Road, water and sewer running through the property. and it's going to be a bunch of solar panels when we desperately need housing. And that was done because there wasn't proper coordination between Guilford County and City of Greensboro. And that's something I think we have to stop and we have to take a hard look at, particularly in light of the Toyota megasite southeast of town. And there's a lot of land between the Greensboro city limits and the megasite that has to be developed.
Over the next 120 days, it sounds like the Greensboro City Council will be studying the issue. What are your thoughts about the public opposition that could happen during that 120-day period? Do you have any concerns that this council might relent to some of that public anxiety that we're talking about?
You know, local politics is like making sausage, and they're making sausage right now, and it generally turns out okay. So give them a chance, let them do their job and see what happens. I'm hoping the sausage will taste okay at the end of the production. But right now they're making a lot of sausage, a lot of controversy, a lot of arguments. But again, my position on this would be simply that we're solving a problem that doesn't realistically exist.
Well, there's a lot of controversy, and it's not just isolated to the Greensboro City Council meetings. It's really starting to erupt and spread out on Facebook and through social media. This Yo Greensboro page, this, I tell you, Robbie, I talk to people in Raleigh. I had a conversation this past weekend with a friend of mine that lives in Raleigh, and he was asking me about Yo Greensboro. This is a page that now he even seems to follow to get some information and news about what's happening in Greensboro. You know, if you were mayor today, if you won your race, how much attention would you personally pay to what's being said online right now?
Well, you know, the individual day-to-day stuff is in my view, sometimes very harsh. I mean, what they've done to a number of the elected officials in terms of cartoons and stuff is over the edge. But I think you have to listen to why, have to look at some history and think about why it's happening. I think we have, over the last 10 years, this isn't a new city council sort of scenario. This is a 10 or 12 year discussion that has evolved in our community for a number of reasons, and really don't need to go into that, but it's all based on transparency and accountability. And Yo Greensboro picked up a lot of traction when they got the expense accounts out of DGI, and that gave them some credibility because there were some things in there that were questionable, so it's time to really, in my view, open up everything. If it's not allowed to be kept private, privileged information such as lawsuits, economic development, personnel under a state statute, I'd have sunshine on everything down there. Make it very easy for a citizen to get document requests in a very timely manner. And again, and the foundation should not be on circling the wagons. The foundation should be based on sunshine, transparency, and accountability. I read an editorial in the paper by Lewis Pitts and Spoma yesterday, and they basically said that, and they went back and looked at some of the actions that the council had taken over the past few months and said, you know, we really need to be more transparent, and I think that's something that's super important.
You know, I'm starting to see more of these social media pages emerge in addition to Yo Greensboro. There looks like there may be a couple others that have set up as well. Many of these pages portray themselves to be journalists. And I always tell my audience all the time, I am not a journalist. I do put together some great conversations that I do think educate and inform the public, but I'm not a journalist. I'm more of a commentator. I don't know how you define some of these pages, but do you think social media give elected officials a better understanding of public opinion, or are they sometimes distorting the real understanding of it all?
Well, I think they're, you know, I think you've got to you got to look at a number of sources, just like we do nationally. You've got to look at both CNN and Fox News and try to figure out what's in between that maybe is reality. You have to do the same thing locally. You know, I've been around long enough to have watched the emergence of the Rhinoceros Times in the early 90s. And at one point, John Hammer had 48,000 copies of that newspaper going out every week and giving it away for free. And they would disappear off the shelf at the American Legion Hut on 16th Street before lunchtime, the first day they were put out. So that type of thing that's what's happening today with the Yoe Greensboro deal. It's the Johnny Hammer of this generation. And you've got the tools to be able to take advantage of it. One of the things that used to be the case in City Hall was that you kind of start talking about a decision, and you'd have several days, if not weeks, about making that decision when people really wouldn't know much about it. Well, today, by the time you think about it and the first word is spoken, somebody has leaked it to some online guy, and that person's put it out there. So it's instant, and it's much more difficult to manage through than it used to be.
Here's where I want to try to pin you down a little. Do you consider these pages to be journalism, or are they just commentating?
I think it's an expression of frustration in this case. I think the frustration is the inability to be heard. And I always took a foundational principle of if that person was upset enough at City Hall to leave their sofa, drive downtown, come and speak from the floor, that what came out of their mouth may not be the real issue. But we needed to listen to them because they were upset and really figure out what was behind it and then deal with it. In my opinion, in this case, it's a frustration over lack of transparency and accountability in city government. And it's going to get worse until the city just takes a deep breath and says, everything's got to be public except for what's prohibited by state law. And we're going to hold everybody in this building accountable to that standard. And when they do that, you're going to see a dramatic change, I think, in the whole deal.
You know, there have been some, I like to call them skirmishes between some of the city council members, the mayor included, now even the city attorney and some of these people that are commentating, as I like to describe, about what's happening in Greensboro. What would be your advice to some of these city officials? Because the way I just listened to you describe how you would respond to what's occurring right now, it seems like it's a contrast to the way the mayor and the city attorney are currently responding. So what would be your advice to them?
You know, I'm not the mayor. I got soundly thumped in this election. We've got a mayor. The mayor's got to make her calls, and the council's got to make its calls. And I'm just saying what I'm reading in these disputes is a long running argument, a long running conversation and a long running conflict that has gotten so personal that someone has to step away. And the only people that can really step away is the government and say, we're going to open this thing up and let the chips fall where they may. And we're going to go do our jobs to run this city and help run this county and make the life better for our citizens as opposed to getting into this paranoid tit for tat with some online guys that really know how to stir the pot. I'll give these guys credit. They can tick you off 100 different ways. If my picture had been in online looking like some of the stuff they've drawn, I'd be madder than a wet hen.
I think I'm laughing, Robbie, but I think you're spot on. And I made that point to Mayor Pro Tem Denise Turner-Roth that some of the pictures and some of the images that I see being used are so unflattering that I think it's striking a personal nerve. And some of the reaction is coming from a personal place and not necessarily a professional place. You know, Robbie, you you spent quite a bit of last year making the argument that Greensboro needed a different direction. I mean, you ran for mayor. Now you've had several months to watch this new administration and this new council and some of the things we're talking about today. Do you think you were wrong about anything?
I'm still standing on that same old platform of transparency and accountability. I think that's the way to clean this place up, and I think it would make a dramatic difference if some of that was emphasized and consistently emphasized. We've got to stop fussing at each other and start getting some things done. With the amount of jobs and economic development that are coming into this region, we don't have time to deal with all this petty stuff. We've got a regional water and sewer system we've got to put in place, or else we're not going to be able to flush a toilet in 5 years. If we don't do that, you know, all the job announcements in the world aren't going to mean anything. We've got a downtown that needs a lot of work. And folks, I can say this. I don't think closing Elm Street's a very good idea. I'll say that. Right up. I've looked at it and I don't think that's transformational for our downtown. I think what is transformational for our downtown is getting the homeless off of Elm Street, because you can't operate a business effectively when you've got homeless folks that are in the street and folks are coming in to spend $100 on a dinner. You're just not going to do it. If you've got a noise problem in downtown, put a noise ordinance in place and find it and enforce it, and you won't have your noise problem. So let's don't dodge the main issues. And public safety, I mean, I can't go anywhere without somebody saying, I'm not going downtown because I don't feel safe. Okay, you can put out all the statistics you want about it, but when you read in the paper about two people getting shot at the corner of Smith Street and Spring Street 10 days ago, you say, I'm not going down there.
You know, Robbie, you made these same arguments when you came on shortly after the election earlier in the year. It's now August. Here soon, we're going to be starting up a whole new election as we go into the midterms. Have you seen any improvement in downtown in this past 8 or 9 months? I will say that I've noticed that this new council has held several meetings and some walking meetings. They even invited me to some of those meetings I wasn't able to attend. But are you seeing any noticeable improvement?
You know, I think they're making sausage. And again, back to the sausage analogy. They are working to try to get their hands around it. I think they understand that there's some issues. But I think, number one, there needs to be a community focus. I'm not going to blame everything on city council, because a city really functions when the business community, the elected officials, the philanthropic community, all kind of work together to get things going. So I think the challenge here is, how do we put the coalition together so that the burden is not on city council, the burden is not on the business community, but you've got everybody with a common vision and a common plan and trying to execute it. We got to get out of the mudslinging. We got to go ahead and start getting some things done, because we got a lot of jobs coming in here. It could be hugely positive for our city. And I love this city, and I don't want to see us left behind because of the infighting. I want to see us launch this city to be one of the great cities in the Southeast. We've got the opportunity to do that, but we can't do it when we're distracted by minutia and ugly discourse.
You talk about just that lack of unity around a cohesive message and maybe even around a cohesive identity. With the growth that Greensboro has been going through, the extreme growth of the really just all the new jobs and all the new energy and all the momentum, do you think that that's leading to some type of an identity problem within the city?
I don't think Greensboro's got an identity problem. We're a big town that's growing into a pretty big city. And a lot of the jobs are on the periphery of the city. Toyota and Jet Zero are not inside the city limits. But obviously people are going to come to the city for goods and services and recreation. And some of them will even live inside the city. So we've got we've got, you know, we are the hub of this region, and we've got to step up and act like that. We can't afford the next Jet Zero or the next large investor that's considering building, you know, apartment units in our downtown to watch what's going on here and say, you know, I'm not going to get involved in that. I'm going to go somewhere else. People are going to make choices based on their perception of the city. And so we've got to clean it up. We've got to make ourselves look good. The first impression that most folks get here is not when they arrive here physically. It's what they read online, what they see going on at videotapes of council meetings and county commissioner meetings. They know a lot about us before they even get off that airplane and set foot in Greensboro, North Carolina. So we really got to pay attention to how we're looking outwardly at this point.
Now, I think you're spot on, and I do think Greensboro over the last 5-6 years, maybe a little bit longer, have now emerged as the triad leader. I constantly say that when it comes to the triad economy, Greensboro is the de facto leader. They are going to be what causes a rising tide to lift all boats throughout the region. And so I totally agree with you. I heard a great presentation last week from Graham Bennett and Kevin Baker from PTI, the Airport Authority. And they just talked about some of the investments they're making, the growth that they're expecting, the billions of dollars that's coming in from the Jet Zero investment, as well as just the fact that Greensboro is now the talk of the aviation industry. Even when you go over into Europe, there's companies and individuals and leaders talking about what's happening in Greensboro. So I think Greensboro has a really, really bright future. Here's one of my final questions for you, Robbie. If Mayor Abuswader called you tomorrow and said, Robbie, give me one piece of advice from someone who sat in the chair, what would you tell her?
Well, number one, I'm not expecting her to call. So I'm not going to wait on that call. If she does call, I'll talk to her. And it'll be a conversation between Mary Kay and myself. But I just as soon not put that out online. I'd tell it to her. If and when she does call. What I will say, Algernon, is I've got way too much respect for my friends in Winston-Salem and High Point to say that Greensboro is leading the way. I think we are part of the Carolina core. I think the Carolina core is leading the way. I think what is happening in Winston-Salem is extraordinary. Wake Forest University is just going gangbusters, and I think that the future is very bright. To my friends in High Point, the area around the ballpark is dynamic. When you look at what's happening down there and what will be announced down there, they are building a true downtown around that ballpark, and it's very exciting. So I believe we've got a lot of good things going. I think Greensboro is going to be just fine. I would tell you that we got to pay some attention to this downtown, and I think it has to be from the very highest levels. People cannot abdicate responsibility for the state of our downtown. We have to assume responsibility. We have to have a shared vision, and we have to execute that vision. If not, we will still be a successful city, but we won't reach the level of excellence that we have the potential to reach.
You know, Robbie, I think your response to that question is the reason you're such a great politician, such a balance.
I'm not a great politician. I've lost the last two elections I've run in, but
you're a great politician to me. I think you're always very balanced. You're very intentional. You're always very thoughtful with the way you look at not only Greensboro, but the region as a whole. And that's the reason why you're always welcome here on this show. That's the reason why I consider you to be a great friend and mentor. And I just appreciate all the work you continue to do. Here's my absolute last question. This is probably going to be the hardest question from our entire conversation. You know how much I love supporting locally owned restaurants, bars, breweries, cafes. I just think they make up the fabric of any community, whether that's Greensboro, Portland, LA, no matter where you go. Those are the small businesses that create the fabric of a city. So here's my last question for you. What's one restaurant in your hometown or in Greensboro that you'd recommend?
Let me tell you, I've got lots of friends in the restaurant business, and my nickname in my workout class in the morning is Q. And it's been my nickname for about 15, 18 years, and it stands for barbecue. And so I've got several barbecue restaurants that I frequent. Main one is probably Country Barbecue on Wendover Avenue. I'm a frequent visitor at Postabilities. Cindy Issa just treats me so good, and I can't walk in either one of those restaurants for a breakfast, lunch, or dinner meal and not see at least half a dozen people that I know well.
I absolutely knew when I asked the question you were not going to be able to give us one because you didn't want to disappoint anyone.
I give you another half dozen.
Oh, I know you could.
I love to eat, and we have got great restaurants in Greensboro, and we deserve to support them. I'll tell you that, Algernon, before this broadcast, I just left Gassan's on Battleground. I had a great sandwich and came back here full of energy, ready to talk to you.
When I had former mayor of Lexington, Newell Clark, he was on the show this year, Robbie, and he couldn't give me one either. He gave me like six or seven.
You got to. Yum Yum's hot dogs. Give me a Yum Yum's hot dogs. When my wife is not in town, I can go to Yum Yum's because otherwise she'll know exactly what I ate for lunch when I come home for dinner.
Well, I think all the ones you've named are great. I do want to shout out Cindy over at Postabilities. They've been in Greensboro forever. I love their food. And even Ray Issa over at Cafe
Pasta. Awesome.
Just another great option as well. So we could do this all day. But, Robbie, thank you. Thank you so much for being here. This has been another episode of Locked In with Algernon Cash. Thank you as well for joining me. Greensboro is going to continue growing. And with that growth will come difficult decisions about taxes, development, infrastructure, neighborhoods, and what kind of city Greensboro ultimately wants to become. Robbie Perkins, former mayor of Greensboro, thank you for coming back and spending some time with us. And if you value these conversations, then I invite you to support this work. Your donations help us continue bringing together leaders and thinkers who are willing to have honest discussions about politics, business, money, and the community issues that matter most to our state and, of course, our region. Visit LockedIn.cash to become a reoccurring supporter. Your contribution helps us continue producing independent conversations that elevate our region. You can also subscribe to my podcast on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify. Share this episode and send it to a friend. I'm Algernon Cash, and y'all stay locked in.
The executive producer of the Locked In podcast is Algernon Cash for WGC. The associate producer is Tim Beeman for Such and Such Media. This podcast is copyrighted and cannot be reproduced without express written consent of WGC.